Welcome back to the course on Critical Theory, Cultural Studies, and Postmodern Theory, considered in terms of civil liberty. This is Lecture 9. We are well into the postmodern theorists now, and at this point we're going to endeavor a discussion and treatment of deconstruction that is inaugurated by Jacques Derrida. This is some of the most difficult and dense material, in fact, probably the most difficult and dense material that we will treat. I should warn you that some of the introductory comments that we're going to make are going to be difficult to grasp at first until we get deeper into it. So what he does in the outset of the book that we're considering, which is Of Grammatology, is to lay out some of the claims and then later to justify the claims with writing that is quite obscure in any case, but I believe we have done a good job to break it down and to get to the gist of what he's getting at here. There are questions that will remain and that we'll have to leave almost open as bracketed questions, but the implications I think we can draw are still clear. But this lecture on deconstruction, deconstruction will be treated in two consecutive lectures. I just don't think we can handle the whole thing in one fell swoop. So we're going to begin. Jacques Derrida is a French writer, but he was born in Algiers and immigrated to France. He was educated in France. In fact, he was a student of Foucault's. He lived from 1930 to 2004. I won't go into much of his biography, because it's enough to deal with his ideas. And let's jump right in. Deconstruction. This is inaugurated by Jacques Derrida, and his book Of Grammatology in 1967 is the most formal and complete exposition of this philosophy. We'll do our best with it. Now, we should note from the beginning that we should recall Saussure's formulation, and we're going to bring this slide up a couple times. We'll bring it back in a couple times here and there to keep this in mind. Under Saussure's formulation, their language works as follows. There's a signifier, or the word. There's the signified, or the concept, that the signifier elicits. And then these together form a sign which points to the referent, or the object, or ontology referred to. Now, this is a formulation with which Derrida is going to play with entirely throughout this piece, this book. He will deconstruct the whole conception here, but he begins with it, and then the big question will be whether he conflates the signified and the referent. That is really the crux of the issue, I think. Now, what is grammatology? After all, the book's title is Of Grammatology. Grammatology, he defines as the science of writing, and it's the study of writing, which is this book will be the inauguration of, as he sees it. Right from the start, he says, a historical-metaphysical epoch must finally determine as language the totality of its problematic horizon. Now, I put this in a different formulation. Language is the limit of metaphysics. Everything in philosophy is contained in and by language, period. He says, it must finally determine as language the totality of its problematic horizon. He might have said, language is the totality of the problematic horizon of a historical metaphysical epoch. Instead, he puts the subject of the sentence after, and that makes it a little more difficult. There's a lot of that in this writing. He says, and these preliminary remarks again are going to be quite difficult to get our head around until we delve deeper into it. Writing no longer issues from a logos. There's this point at which writing has broken off from truth. Logos here is the word. It's the It's the embodiment of truth in word. That is to say, logos, or the basis of truth in Western philosophy, no longer governs truth or what we write. And we'll see why that is. Language seems to be limited and determined by what it signifies. That is, there seems to be a limitation of language by the signified. But, he says, language actually exceeds the signified. It overflows the signified. And also, what was subsumed under the name of language is beginning to let itself be transferred to, or at least summarized under, the name of writing. So there's this new epoch of writing, which has come after the epoch of logos, or language, if you will. And this epoch of writing is revealing what was the conditions of the previous epoch. That's what he sees unfolding, and it should be understood here. Something about deconstruction that is often missed is deconstruction is not about the critic or the analyst deconstructing texts or deconstructing this or that construction of the world. It is the observation and transcription of the deconstruction taking place on its own in language. There is no deconstruction happening by the, it's not something a person does. It is something that the deconstructionist observes being done. It is language taking itself apart. And he's saying that he is positing himself at this point of beginning in which language is now taking over from, I'm sorry, writing is taking over from the epoch of the logos or language. And writing no longer designates the exterior surface of language. Okay. Rather, writing subsumes language. So it overcomes language itself. And nothing escapes the signifier of language. That is, the idea of the signified as a separate thing that kind of escapes writing is not escaping it now with escapes language is not escaping it with writing. There is not a single signified that escapes, even if recaptured, the play of signifying references that constitute language. Okay, so there's nothing escaping language. There's, as he would put it later, and this is a very major point, but we'll talk about it later. There is no outside of text, he says. So there's no outside of language. But we can only see this in the era of, or the epoch of writing, which has followed the epoch of language per se, or the logos epoch, the epoch of logos. But now we see that there's no signified that escapes language. Okay? Thus, the very concept of language as a sign system is effectively destroyed. That is, the idea that it's signifying something outside of itself, because the sign that once merely pointed to an exterior now does not. Now, that exterior is not an exterior as in the object world. It's an exterior to language, or as in the conceptual world. Remember that the signified is not the referent. It's a different thing. It's not the tree. It's the idea of the tree in the mind. So he's saying here, I'm saying that really effectively the sign system is destroyed because the separation of signifier and signified is broken. It's collapsing. Okay, the sign signifier no longer points to an exterior. Now, he's going to go through the whole history, not the history, but an understanding of metaphysics of the epoch of logos. And how language functions within it first. Okay, so we have to understand what's happening here. This is something that has already taken place, but he's going to go back and talk about this epoch of metaphysics. At the very same time that language overtakes the signified, or doesn't any longer necessarily correspond to it, language effaces all its limits. So what that means is effectively language overcoming its limits and the effacement of the sign are the same thing. In short, language has become everything. And this is not something that he says that he's effectively doing. He's saying that it is something that has already, it has been effectively done, and that he's transcribing, observing, and noting. He's not making deconstruction happen. He is the observer of deconstruction as it's happening. But this development is not merely an historically contingent one, he's saying. In other words, it couldn't have been otherwise. Contingent means that it could go any way, either way, different ways, not any way, but certain plurality of possibilities. But he's saying, no, this was necessary, determined, and unavoidable. Whereas I put it, it was always, I'm putting all this actually, but it was always in the cards, so to speak. This was a necessary development from what? From philosophy, from theology, etc. We'll see. It follows from the fact of being as a self-relationship, the identicality of being with itself. And now, what follows from the fact? This collapse of sign and signifier and signified, of the sign, this overtaking of the signifier by the signifier, this excess of the signifier over the signified, this impossibility of anything being outside of language, it follows from being as a self-relationship of language. Here is the being as identical to itself. That's what he's saying here. Language, in fact, produced the very idea of the world. I want to add my word. Language produced the idea of the world and the very idea of an inside and outside. That is, the inside of the self and the outside world. This very distinction, he's saying, is a function of language. Okay? And the very idea of the world is a product of language, he says. Now, writing has taken over for language. This new epoch has emerged. And writing is not only the physical gestures of literal pictographic or ideographic inscription, but also the totality of what makes it possible. And also beyond the signifying face, language, the signified face itself. So language is the signified. The signified is really language in the end. Okay. And as I said, this is the era where we are, the epoch in which we are in, according to him. And it is followed this previous epoch, which he is going to then go back to treat. Writing is more than the writing with language, but also other things are writing, like cinematography, choreography, of course, but also pictorial, musical, sculptural writing, etc. This is a minor point, but I thought I'd put it out there. The gramme, or the grapheme, is the unit of writing and the origin of meaning in general. So he's coining a term here, gramme or grapheme, as the unit of meaning in writing. Okay, so this is analogous to the phoneme, which is the unit of speech in speaking. It's the utterance, right? But this is the utterance in writing. Okay. He makes a point here about mathematics and how it shows, since it's non-phonetic, it challenges phonetic writing and its metaphysics of presence, which we'll talk about, or all of metaphysics or ontology, because there's a sign system that doesn't have a phonetic correlative, which then, therefore, debunks the idea that writing is phonetic as such, that it derives from the phonetic, and the phonetic is the metaphysics of presence, as we'll see in a minute here, and then the metaphysics of presence is all metaphysics, ontology, the whole idea of being. Wow, we'll get there. Thus, we have the deconstruction of all significations that have their source in that of the logos, particularly the signification of truth. So he's deconstructing the source of logos itself. It all comes down to language. Language is going to be what produced it, you know, as we see here. That is, language heretofore the location of truth is actually broken off from truth. In Judeo-Christianity, this logos is known as God, or the Word. And this is now writing in this new era. In this new era of writing, language breaks off from this logos world. Okay, that's what he's getting at here. But we're still going to go through an excursus into this logos world, or the metaphysics of presence, or metaphysics in general, metaphysics in Western philosophy and theology. This logocentrism, which placed the principal importance on the word, was also and primarily a phonocentrism. It started off in phonocentrism, and it became logocentrism. Logocentrism is this focus and centrality of the word as the means of truth, and phonocentrism was the first instance of this logocentrism. And he's going to go into a discussion of phonetics in order to derive philosophical ideas coming from it. Okay, here's what he was getting at with this phonocentrism. Because the voice was always the closest representation to experience, the closest to the signified of experience of the world, as the original signifier of experience of the signified, with the non-phonetic writing, that is, with writing, language's connection to ontology is thus breached. Okay, so in the spoken word, there was this seeming unity between the experience of the signified and the world and the word, okay, and the utterance. But with language, there's a once removed, okay, there's a regression away from that. And this regression will inaugurate the whole history of Western metaphysical philosophy and metaphysics and theology as well. Just as all men have not the same writing. Now, he's quoting Descartes here for a purpose. Just as all men have not the same writing, they have different writings. So all men have not the same speech sounds. So there are different languages and different sounds for those languages. But mental experiences, or the signified, of which these are the primary symbols, semia, protos, are the same for all. The signifieds are the same for everybody, says Descartes, as are also those things of which our experiences are the images, the signified. That's Descartes, quoted by Derrida. By the way, we're at page 11 of Derrida, of a very long book, well into 300-400 pages. Grammatology not only was the object made present by the phoneme, so too was the subject, and both were co-present to each other through the phoneme. So the spoken word made experience of the object and the subject as a co-presence possible. And when we move to the signifier signified of the written system, we get a regression away from this presence, this metaphysics of presence. This epoch of the logos, now we're talking about the previous epoch, brings the debasement of writing. It doesn't debase writing. It brings writing as a debasement. Writing is the debasement here of the phonetic. And the disconnection of the signifier and the signified, and one might add the subject and the object. Okay, writing inaugurates the split of into the signifier and the signified, the split into the sign. The sign is born with writing. And so is also logos, that which is seen to be signified comes into being with this regression into the debasement of writing, not the debasement of writing as such, but writing as debasement of the phonetic. To writing, we owe the whole metaphysics of Western philosophy, and not only philosophy, but of being as we think of it. And this is my paraphrasing of Derrida, which, you know, some might quibble with, but I think I'm on it here. As existence, as the presence of subject and object, we owe the whole of Western metaphysics to writing, to language. To language as written language, okay? Thus, writing marks the debasement of language in the sense of this co-presence of subject and object is lost. The whole quest for truth is contingent upon writing. Writing brings about and inaugurates the problem that makes all of Western philosophy. For all, you know, that is Western philosophy, that it treats. The split of the subject and object, the co-presence between those, the split of the sign into this, the split of meaning into the signifier and the signified, this comes with writing, and this marks the debasement of language. We start with this idea first, that speech was what represented experience immediately. Then writing was a representation of that representation, so it's a once removed. So we might think of this in terms of Plato's cave. If you recall, in Plato's cave, there were these subjects, basically I think they're chained down, and they are watching images on a wall which are reflections from a candle projecting shadows of the replica of the facsimiles of the world onto the wall, so that what they're looking at is thrice removed from reality. Here, writing is at least one regression away from the representation of reality, which was phonetic at first. It's the debasement of language in the sense that it represents a representation of a representation. Thus, writing itself inaugurates the whole quest for truth that is philosophy. Once writing begins, there's the problem. The problem is already presented for philosophy. How do we get to the truth? We only have this problem because of writing. So writing, in effect, is the fall. It makes the quest for truth necessary because it split the signifier and the signified, subject and object. It divided, it set apart these terms, which were seemingly co-present, but frankly, they weren't, as he'll point out later. This was merely an illusion. The epoch of the Logos thus debases writing, considered as mediation of mediation, and as a fall into the exteriority of meaning. To this epoch belongs the difference between the signified and the signifier, or at least the strange separation and their parallelism and the exteriority of one to the other. Okay? This epoch of Logos is this debasement, which is writing, which is this mediation of mediation and a fall, like the fall. This might be considered, for Derrida, the fall. Is what comes with writing, okay? So he's doing a bit of a theological rewriting here, if you will, as well. The difference between signified and signifier belongs in a profound and implicit way to the totality of the great epoch covered by the history of metaphysics, and in a more explicit and more systematically articulated way, to the narrow epoch of Christian creationism and infinitism, when these appropriate the resources of Greek conceptuality. Okay, let's break that down. The break of into signified and signifier belongs to the great epoch covered by the history of metaphysics, or another way to put that is the history of metaphysics the great epoch covered by the history of metaphysics is owing to the split between the signified and the signifier. And likewise, so is the Christian theology, and so on and so forth. The fall, the separation from God, the idea. Now, he's saying here, as it appropriated Greek conceptuality here, we know that Christianity, so they say, it depends on how you look at it, either borrowed Platonic idealism, or Platonic idealism was a reflection of what would be the revealed as the truth through Christianity. I'm not going to adjudicate that choice. One cannot retain the convenience of the scientific truth of the Stoic and later the medieval opposition between the signons and the signatum, or the signifier and the signified, without also bringing with it all its metaphysico-theological roots. To these roots adheres not only the distinction between the sensible and intelligible, already a great deal, with all that it controls, namely metaphysics in its totality. I mean, I've just said this already. The whole of metaphysics is owing to this opposition between signons and signatum, or signifier and signified. With the split into the signifier and signified comes the birth of God. The sign and divinity, he writes, have the same place and time of birth. That is, when the sign comes into being, which is represented by the split of signifier and signified, the age of the sign is essentially theological. So this epoch that we've passed is a theological epoch, because the split into signifier and signified is the birth of logos, that is, the truth, which only becomes necessarily posited as such because language separates us from it. Further, the sign, signifier-signified split, was born with writing, the exteriority of a language to an original spoken language. There is no sign without writing. Thus, the theological is a product of writing itself. And there we end our first lecture on deconstruction, the end of Lecture 9. We will pick up and continue and end with Lecture 10. So thank you very much.